Now let's talk about advanced micronutrients, histamine, and mast cell activation syndrome. One of the important things to distinguish is the difference between histamine intolerance and mast cell activation. Histamine intolerance is very simple to identify. It really is when we have more histamine coming in than histamine going out. So what this basically means is the two enzymes that break down histamine, diamine oxidase in the small intestine, and histamine N-methyltransferase in the liver. When these two enzymes are not working appropriately to break down histamine, and we encounter histamine in our environment through reactions, say, to trees or reactions to just histamine that is naturally even found in food, basically, anytime we have more histamine coming in, then the two enzymes that can break histamine can, say, get rid of and put out, that's when we have a histamine overload in the body. So basically, if somebody has a really low histamine load, they could perhaps have a IgE reaction to grass or to trees, but it may not be enough to actually trigger any symptoms if the enzymes in the body are able to actually break things down properly. And so then the histamine load is actually low enough in the body to not create symptoms. So we can look at histamine intolerance really as having more allergens or more reactions to histamine that are through an IgE production or through the natural histamines just found in our everyday foods that we eat, then we can actually break down. Mast cell activation is different. Mast cell activation is more when there is something that has actually triggered the mast cells that contain histamine to basically break down at a really high rate. So there can be a level of histamine intolerance as part of mast cell activation. When the mast cells are activated, if they're activated at a very small amount in a very small way, it's possible that the enzymes in the body could just break that histamine down, and we don't even know that the mast cells are activated. But mast cell activation syndrome really comes in when we have a scenario where the mast cells are broken down at a really high rate, and that's more than the body can handle, and so that histamine load gets really high. So we have two different things then happening. It's really the difference between these two, or just, it's really from a mechanism of action standpoint. So again, histamine intolerance is simply when we have more histamine coming in than going out, versus mast cell activation is when something is actually triggering the mast cells to break down at a high rate. So those are the basics here. Another way to identify, we're going to go through some lab testing and get more into this, but a simple way of identifying the differences here is also really that histamine intolerance typically results in classic allergy type of symptoms. So somebody might have runny eyes or itchy eyes, runny nose, then we might have skin reactions and rashes. Sometimes we get some nausea with this, and just like any allergies, we can get some fatigue. Mast cell activation is a whole different ball game. Mast cell activation is when people become extremely reactive to their entire environment. So I had a patient, for example, that had mast cell activation syndrome, that she even started reacting to water and sunlight, that would make her break out in rashes. I'm not talking like, you know, special water of any type as far as like dirty water or like, you know, water from a certain exposure or whatnot. It was tap water she was noticing, and the thought was that it was maybe the minerals in the tap water. She would go out to the outside and react to the sun. These types of people tend to be really reactive to just about every supplement out there. So that's also a big clue if somebody is reacting, not just saying that they're sensitive and you have to go slow, but if they're like negatively reacting to small amounts of like pretty much every supplement, that basically is telling us their mast cells are in overdrive, and anything that produces the teeniest amount of histamine in the body is just gonna throw them over the edge with that mast cell. So it's one of the trickiest things I honestly feel to work with, because it's really challenging in the fact that people are just so reactive versus histamine intolerance, where we can really work, as I'm going to show you, with the enzymes that break down histamine to fairly easy restore somebody back to balance. So any of these cells, the mast cells, the basophils, the platelets, histaminergic neurons, interchromaffin cells, any of these cells can actually release histamine. So it is more than just the classic thought, mast cells and basophils. And of course, then this is a little bit of research to show you that histamine intolerance is really, just like I said, it's a disequilibrium of accumulated histamine, histamine coming in versus the degraded histamine, histamine going out. And this is basically talking about DAO. DAO is the main enzyme for ingested histamine. So DAO tends to be more a scavenger for extracellular histamine versus histamine N-methyltransferase is really more intracellular. So DAO, we do see that DAO breaks down much more histamine than histamine N-methyltransferase. Histamine N-methyltransferase is really about 20% versus DAO is about 80% of histamine. And we also see that, like I said, that DAO is a little bit more of an extracellular enzyme versus histamine N-methyltransferase is more of an inside, of an intracellular enzyme. Okay, so then let's look at mast cell activation syndrome. So mast cell activation syndrome, basically, the cause of mast cell activation really depends upon the type. So there's basically three different types: primary, secondary, and idiopathic. And so primary is when we have an abnormal production of mast cells. So this is when we actually have a genetic defect in the KIT gene. And so this KIT gene is when there's this genetic defect, we actually then have this upregulation of the production of mast cells. So that's obviously is a very difficult thing when that gene turns on. I do believe genes can turn off based upon some preliminary research that we're seeing, but it's definitely not, it doesn't seem to be as easy yet to turn them off as they turn on. So this is definitely a very challenging thing if we have a defect in that KIT gene. So we can test for this KIT mutation. So we can run this KIT allele specific PCR test and then follow up with a bone marrow biopsy if we see something positive. So pretty invasive, obviously, to test for. So not something that we classically are testing for in our clinic, but that's something that is you can do. And the KIT mutation analysis, you can actually get it by, this is what you look up at Quest, the KIT D816 mutation analysis. So if you do this test, basically you can run it through Quest, and then if it's positive to really confirm the diagnosis, you can follow up with a bone marrow biopsy. But certainly running this blood test can give you a little bit of an insight without doing that biopsy. And then secondary types of MCAS, of mast cell activation syndrome, often when we have a normal bone marrow production of mast cells, but they just become hyperactivated. So primary is when we have a genetic defect where we have an overproduction of mast cells. Secondary is really the more common thing. We just see an overactivation of mast cells. So things that are going to activate the mast cells are going to be drugs and alcohol, too much exercise, infections, venoms, substance P, hypoxia, adenosine. So here's something where it's like the most common way we see mast cells activated in our clinic practice is really in the Lyme and mold and chronic infection community. So when we have chronic infections for so long, it just becomes, they're not dealt with. It becomes very likely that these mast cells are going to get activated. So that's the population we see this in the most. I haven't actually ever seen somebody personally that has done so much exercise that they put themselves into mast cell activation, but theoretically it's certainly possible. But it's important to know that stimuli like physical exercise can increase mast cell activation, because if we do have somebody say that got this, their mast cells activated from something like a chronic infection or drug and alcohol use in excess, we want to remember that we need to be careful about things like physical stimuli, too much exercise, because we could be really stimulating that mast cell scenario. So other things that will activate the mast cells, complement C3A and C5A, cytokines. So we have immune responses and inflammatory responses there. Lipoproteins can do this. Neuropeptides can do this. Temperature extremes, high or low, hyperosmolarity can all increase mast cell activation syndrome. So that's why when we see all these things here, we see the hyperosmolarity, when we see like lipoproteins, well, of course we all have lipoproteins in our body, and there's a lot of things in life that can increase cytokines or complement C3A and C5A. So when we see this scenario here, this is why people become so reactive, because it really becomes extremely hard once these mast cells are hyperactivated to get these inflammatory molecules and get some of this reaction down, because people are literally just reactive to their entire environment. And this extreme temperature is, I think, why that patient was really irritated by sunlight and, you know, going outside. And maybe it wasn't super extreme, but the sun we have here in Denver is so intense at our altitude here that I think that's why she was even reacting to just being outside, which obviously creates other problems. So, and then there's thought to be idiopathic, no known cause. So our opinion on the idiopathic is basically that there is always a cause and always a reason. So just saying that, you know, there's no known cause, well, maybe it's more difficult to find the cause, but we have to be very careful about saying it's not known. We really do see that most of the time, if it's going to be a chronic infection, a lot of the conventional world, for example, isn't acknowledging chronic Lyme yet and isn't acknowledging mold illness, these infections that we work with on a daily basis. And so I really feel, and we really feel, that this whole thing of saying no known cause is really not yet identifying some things like Lyme and mold and other things in the infection world as actually legit and actually a problem, and that those are some of the causes of mast cell activation syndrome, just because we see that so commonly in our clinical practice. And then how we test for these things. So let's look at histamine intolerance first. So this is that advanced barrier assessment test by Dunwoody Labs. So we see the zonulin on the upper left, that's really a marker for intestinal permeability. But then on the upper right, we can see diamine oxidase. So diamine oxidase here is in the yellow, it's borderline low. So then histamine in the lower left is borderline high. So it makes sense that if diamine oxidase is low, we're not breaking down the histamine. Typically, when we see DAO go down, we will see histamine intolerance, or we will see histamine go up. So this is a sign of histamine intolerance, right? There's more histamine coming in than there is histamine going out. Mast cell activation syndrome. The most specific marker for mast cell activation is serum tryptase. So this is definitely the easiest, most accurate thing to measure. So we see it's almost always increased in patients with hypotensive mast cell activation, but it's gonna be best analyzed 4 hours after an episode, after they feel like they're kind of flared up. That's when we're gonna most likely see the tryptase elevate. So that's the tricky thing. If we wanna see this elevate, we almost have to do something that's going to stimulate a little bit of the mast cells in order to get a positive. So other things that could really can help, and they can be pointers, are things like histamine metabolites in the urine. It's important to realize that bacterial contamination or diet could really influence the histamine metabolite, so it's not a perfect test. Prostaglandin D2 can also be increased with patients with mast cell activation, but it's really nonspecific. And then same with leukotriene E4. We can see that it's increased with mast cell activation, but definitely not as specific as other things. So of all of these markers, tryptase really is that most specific one. The question is then, do we try to actually put somebody in a little bit of an activated state with their mast cells to get that positive test? So 6% of population is positive for an alpha tryptase gene, which is actually correlated with IBS, venom reaction, and flushing. And this may or may not be related to mast cell activation syndrome. It's still an area where additional research is needed. We see that N-methylhistamine can be measured as well. And so 24-hour blood urine is best. So if we do a 24-hour urine is best, not blood urine. If we do a 24-hour urine, we can measure the histamine and methyltransferase, and that basically is a fairly reasonable test as well. But don't do the blood, because the blood for this enzyme tends to be inaccurate. So as I mentioned, prostaglandin D2 is pretty nonspecific. Leukotriene C4 is another thing that we can definitely consider. C4 is released during mast cell activation syndrome. It breaks into that E4 that I mentioned previously, which then can be measured in the urine. So not quite as accurate or specific as something like tryptase, though. We do see other signs, plasma, heparin, chromogranin A. So, you know, none of these are like not very specific markers, but if we're not wanting to try to measure that serum tryptase and put somebody in a mast cell activation state, one thing we can do is measure prostaglandin D2, leukotriene C4, plasma heparin, chromogranin A. And if we're seeing all of this, if we're seeing this pattern, then that can be another big clue that the mast cells are activated. So common things we see in mast cell activation include flushing, tachycardia, hypotension, gastrointestinal symptoms, which could be cramping, nausea, vomiting, diarrhea. Chronic urticaria is almost never associated with systemic mastocytosis. So some of these things, right, that are like histamine intolerance symptoms, like urticaria, we're not going to typically see with mast cell activation syndrome. So it's not going to look like our classic histamine scenario. So sometimes we can see angioedema and upper airway symptoms. That's definitely possible as well. So other clinical signs. So with histamine in general, so this is more histamine intolerance. We might see diarrhea, headache, rhinoconjunctival symptoms, asthma, hypotension, arrhythmias, urticaria, pruritus, flushing. So this is basically much more like a classic allergy type of scenario, the symptoms that we see with histamine intolerance. So, and here's more. We'll see GI, lung, skin, cardiovascular, brain involvement, sneezing, rhinorrhea, congestions of the nose, headache, you know, on and on and on. So like I said, much more related to what we classically think of a histamine symptoms with histamine intolerance. So now looking at HNMT and DAO, DAO is responsible, like we said, for extracellular histamine. It's stored in vesicles and then released into circulation when stimulated. So it's basically made in the small intestine cells, but it is released into circulation and actually scavenges all over the body once it's stimulated. So there's also some creation in the colon, placenta, and kidney as well. So we see low levels with mucosal damage, right? So if we have any damage to the gastrointestinal mucosa, for example, we'll actually see DAO go down. So anytime we see low DAO, that is why it's used and it's looked at in that intestinal barrier assessment, because it's associated with mucosal damage, right? So if we see low DAO, that's when we need to consider, okay, well, what's going on in these organs? What's going on in the small intestine? What's going on in the colon? And to a lesser degree, what's going on in the kidney? Because since those organs produce DAO, if there's a problem with it, then we know there's an inflammation and a problem with those organs. They're not doing their job. Now, sometimes we'll see high histamine and normal DAO, and so the DAO is not enough to actually say bring the histamine down. But in that case, it could be that the body is just, you know, kind of producing the max amount of DAO, and DAO is at a healthy level, and that the histamine is actually just coming in at a rate that's faster than the body can take care of. So it doesn't necessarily mean intestinal problems in that scenario. So histamine and methyltransferase is intracellular histamine, does not compete with DAO for substrate. So they're two totally separate mechanisms and foundational structures. So it does have a slightly higher affinity than DAO for histamine, but it's not as responsible for as much histamine because it's intracellular. And then we see the highest amount in the liver, but it's also pretty high in the kidneys, colon, spleen, prostate, ovaries, spinal cord, bronchi, and trachea. So if we're doing a treatment for histamine intolerance, we can do HisDAO from Zymogen, one with every meal. So that's going to really help break down the histamines that are naturally in our food and lower that histamine load. copper. Copper is actually needed to make DAO, so 2 milligrams twice a day of copper. If we're going to give a dose like this for very long, we do always want to combine copper with about 30 milligrams of zinc, 20 to 30 milligrams of zinc. Typically, we want about a 10 to 1 zinc to copper type of ratio. Vitamin C is also needed in order to make HIS-DAO, as well as B6. So we can give HIS-DAO, that Zymogen product one with meal, and then we can give copper, vitamin C, and B6, since those are the cofactors for the production of that enzyme. And then vitamin A is also helpful for histamine intolerance as well. We want to make sure that we avoid drugs, alcohol, and triggering foods. So there's lists online of high histamine foods. Some of the highest foods out there are going to be things like smoked meat and aged cheeses and shellfish and alcohol. But there's a lot of different foods that are also triggers, and there's a lot of resources you can find online for higher histamine foods. And I usually, if I'm taking away high histamine foods, I usually have people eliminate them all, do a really strict diet for a few weeks, and then just add them back in and see, okay, are they reactive to some? Because I find, for example, some people feel really triggered in histamine intolerance by avocados. Other people I have seen have no impact at all. So it's good to just kind of do a little bit of a trial so we don't take people off of all foods. So H1 and H2 blockers, leukotriene inhibitors, aspirin, and mast cell stabilizers are sometimes helpful for mast cell activation. So mast cell activation syndrome, we approach a little bit differently. We do want to consider things like DAO and HNMT upregulators. So those things for histamine intolerance also apply to mast cell activation syndrome. But often, because it's so severe, the symptoms, we actually sometimes turn to pharmaceutical medicine to just get this under control and lower that mast cell and stabilize the mast cells so that we can get some headway. We also don't do a lot of, like, if somebody has mast cell activation and they have some sort of chronic infection, whether it's something like Lyme and mold or parasites or H. pylori, any of our GI bugs, we often will take a break from killing if this is going on, because people simply can't handle that until we get the mast cell stabilized. Then we see Lactobacillus rhamnosus and Bifidobacterium have been shown to help with mast cell activation, alpha lipoic acid, NAC, vitamin C, quercetin, our essential fatty acids. These are all great resources for and utility, helpful treatments for mast cell activation. So combining really some of these nutrients with some of the things I mentioned on the DAO, the vitamin A, C, B6, copper, and the DAO enzyme, as well as then using some of these pharmaceuticals. So H1 blockers, here's a couple examples, H1 blockers and H2 blockers that are used for mast cell activation. We can use leukotriene inhibitors, sometimes that's helpful as well. And then mast cell stabilizers. So I've used Cromulin and ketotifen, but I have not used this third one here. So they can help. I've never seen them do anything just on their own, but in combination with some of these other treatments, they can really help. Aspirin can also help. There's been one study that showed that it lowered histamine by lowering prostaglandin. So that can be an easy thing to try as well. So from a mechanism standpoint, NAC is basically reducing mucus. So what's interesting is it reduces mucus. So there's some thought about using it for mast cell activation. But I did find one study here that showed that NAC actually increased histamine in animals. So if you're going to use NAC, I definitely recommend adding it on its own and just seeing what's happening. I have used it, and I've used it and found it to be helpful with some people. However, this animal study does make me feel like we need to be a little bit cautious in the use of it. ALA, again, an animal study here, but we see in an animal study that it decreases histamine release from mast cells. So ALA is definitely worth considering. And then vitamin C, we see an inverse relationship of vitamin C and histamine in research. So as vitamin C goes up, histamine goes down, and that could be due to that increase in the DAO activity that is created by vitamin C. So spicy foods tend to be avoided with histamine intolerance. This particular type of Lactobacillus reuteri creates histamine from histidine and diet. So there's the histidine and diet this lactobacillus reuteri will actually convert that histidine to histamine. So making sure if we're using a probiotic, we're using something that is back here, the lactobacillus rhamnosus and bifidobacterium in the probiotic, because those will help versus the lactobacillus reuteri could actually make somebody worse. So just kind of being aware of what the probiotic content is. So for, like I said, these are some of the main ones. I didn't mention fermented food yet, but processed meats, aged cheeses, shellfish, alcohol, and the fermented foods are tend to be the most intense ones for histamine, but then some of the other minor ones you can find online too. So if you're having a hard time getting somebody to do a full histamine diet, this is a good place to start with these five things, getting these five things out for sure. And then here are some of the other ones that we see most commonly: avocados, berries, spinach, tomatoes, eggplant, chili powder, cinnamon, cloves, vinegar, citrus, nuts, grapes, and bananas have all been shown to be high in histamine. So that's it for histamine intolerance and mast cell activation syndrome. Just to kind of sum up here, we want to make sure that we are considering this if we're seeing somebody be reactive to things very easily. If we're seeing more histamine type of, classic histamine type of symptoms, our runny nose, our fatigue, our runny itchy eyes, any of those types of things, we're going to think more histamine intolerance. Those things don't tend to be the problems in mast cell activation. Mast cell activation is tending to be more just hyperreactivity to everything. So, you know, kind of think about that as a differentiation. We can use tests, again, like the 24-hour urine to test histamine and methyltransferase, as well as the Dunwoody test, the advanced barrier assessment test, to basically test the DAO. And then for the mast cell activation, if we can stimulate the mast cells a little bit by giving something that somebody's a little bit reactive to and test tryptase within 4 hours, that's going to be our best bet with actually identifying that. Treatment, we can use the treatment for histamine intolerance, also for mast cell activation syndrome. So that's going to be more working on DAO upregulation. We can also give something like SAMe to upregulate histamine and methyltransferase. So histamine and methyltransferase, obviously, as in its name, is a methyl needed. It needs a methyl group in its enzyme. So SAMe is one of our most potent methyl donors. So we can give something like SAMe to help histamine and methyltransferase work better. So that's another thing we can do in histamine intolerance. And then for the mast cell activation syndrome, we want to basically remember that we can use any of those things, but also really look to stabilize the mast cells, to maybe work on the leukotrienes, to do a lot more concentrated things to really bring down the histamine, the ALA, the high dose vitamin C, these types of things. So then next we'll move on to lesson number 3, which is going to be the food antigen testing. We'll see you then.